I spent a year and a half, at least half, believing that I was in telepathic communication with a higher intelligence from the Sirius double star system. As a matter of fact, I still believe that every Thursday for 2 hours in the afternoon. No, not really. I'm really pure to that one.
In the Old Testament, we read, "Canst thou bind the sweet influences of the Pleiades, or loose the bands of Orion?"
And the ancient Egyptians referred to it as Isis, which is their number one god. The heaviest star in our local neighborhood, the Sirius system, it actually has another little star that goes around it itself. And together, it's about 3 solar masses. So on one of those big Einstein grids, it would be the heavy point.
Your children will be born in a world of 2 suns. They will never know a sky without them.
The brightest star in the sky is our sun. The second brightest star, we have a good chance of being our companion. It's been called the dog, the hound, the fox, the wolf, which is, it's all a dog-like character that seems to run across the sky.
My God, it's full of stars.
Because I know that your work has been crowded with Jim Carrey, as it has with others' work. And I want to know if that influenced your decision to take on this philosophy, or if it's just plain straight-up synchronicity that showed up in a movie while you were in training with this. Because in all actuality, you have been doing, synchromysticism for like 2 years now, even though you've only started blogging in January, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, I was into it since reading Jake's work for maybe about a year or 2 years before I started blogging. So I'd been making notes about what I was seeing. I had noticed that Jim Carrey, Green Man, resonated with Osiris. And then I read your Hounds of Hermes post shortly, before, I'd reached that conclusion. I read your post and you'd put it together quite perfectly, what I'd been thinking of. So I knew that it wasn't just me that was seeing it. And it encouraged me to get more involved in the synchromysticism, because I thought, well, if I'm on the same kind of wavelength, if I'm thinking the same kind of things as yourself, then maybe, if I tell you what I'm seeing, that might help you on your journey, because, yes, what you're seeing is, like feedback for me. So Jim Carrey was, and especially with his Sirius connections, because he's in the Truman Show.
Yeah, where the canine light falls down. You had already seen that?
No, I think when Jake did his Red Ice Creations video,
right,
his Red Ice video, his talk, that was brought up. But that was like a moment where I'd been thinking about Jim Carrey. I think I'd recently seen The Number 23, where his psychiatrist was called Dr. Sirius.
Dr. Sirius, so then it's like,
yeah, so that was like another nudge. Now it was like, okay, Jake's also highlighting the Sirius, the dog connection. So, you know, I knew there was two people out there who might get something from what I said about the Sirius side of things.
Yeah, that was a fantastic, you know, I like all of your work, but the work that you did with the paw prints and the stars and the Sirius connection really was important for me. And like you said, you had actually mentioned to me about Walter Cruntington and everything, but it took me a while. It was actually the time that you dropped that first post that I was really, really paying attention to what he was saying. Because, I mean, this gentleman actually believes that our solar system turns around another star, whether it be the Pleiades or whether it be Sirius, and that that causes the rise and fall of golden ages throughout history. Linking it back to Sirius and linking it back to the Pleiades. But other people have mentioned, like Robert Anton Wilson, and that's why the Sirius hint is actually in the number 23, is because Robert Anton Wilson suspected himself of actually hearing voices from an alien intelligence from Sirius.
Yep.
When he was in the midst of all of his insanity, and others have experienced that as well, like Philip K. Dick, who discovered way above normal realms of intelligence through what he suspected were entities from Sirius as well.
Well, that's it. I was led to Sirius through the paw prints and the pentagrams, and as I started learning more about things, and I came across the articles about Robert Anton Wilson.
Right.
I realized that there's an awful lot about this one star, that had influenced a lot of people's lives, like Robert Anton Wilson and K. Dick.
Yeah.
So finding all these stories, I was like, well, this is just getting more bizarre. And the more I look into this star, the weirder things are getting.
So, I mean, I know that we were already talking about this, because I was studying about Vishnu, and there was one topic on Vishnu that I noticed, and I can't remember where it was, but they said that Vishnu could not be linked to Lucifer, because Lucifer is linked to Venus, or like the day star, which comes right before the sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's the zealous angel that shines right before the sun does. And they said that Vishnu could not have been, because most of the common interpretations of Vishnu are that it was a certain star in the sky. But they said it couldn't be Venus because it passed by the sky three times.
Oh.
And then there's other, I mean, once you start looking into ancient history, like the ancient Sumerian texts and stuff like that, where they talk about that there was another star in the sky, and then you have Lucifer actually, the very possibility that Lucifer was a bright or second sun, and then actually in the movie 2010 by Arthur C. Clarke being used as the name for the second star that Jupiter turns into. It's a real possibility. But in my head, that's absolute craziness. I mean, that's absolute crazy. First off, it's fucking nuts to think what would happen to the world if another sun appeared in the sky. Craziness or pandemonium in the streets is what I would think, or what I would suspect. And then the fact that the synchronicities are being almost pushed to the cup runneth over. In my opinion, with the Sirius Black in the Harry Potter series being a dog connecting with the Dog Star, that perhaps being on purpose. But when you look at his wanted poster and he has two black stars up underneath his name, compiled with the example after example after example of the same thing, almost makes you, certain of the fact that there's going to be, or there is, a rise in consciousness due to the fact of our solar system interacting with another sun. Have you gotten over that? I mean, is that something normal to you now? For a while there, it really was freaking me out. Like, I would drive down the road and think about it and be just almost in a constant state of panic. After a while, that has subsided for me. Have you moved on?
Did I cause that panic? that post?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I'm afraid you did.
I have kind of moved on from that, but I always... No, it's there. It's always, if I ever see paw prints, the natural thing is, it's a little reminder of the Sirius stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, there's still a long way to go, especially with Walter Cruttendon, who's kind of dedicating his life to proving that Sirius is our binary partner and is responsible for the changes of, the ages, the changes of consciousness. But, at the start of it, to me, it was just stars and paw prints. And why do they keep appearing all around me?
You were just following a lead in a way, huh?
Yeah, and it led me to Walter Cruttendon. And then he led me to the thought of, well, maybe these two stars represent stars. Which led me on to Robert Anton Wilson and his experiences, and I went and read Valis to see what Philip K. Dick had to say about it. So it was like just basically following the paw prints to seeing where it would take me.
What is your interpretation of Valis? I mean, is there any relationship or any influence that you can tell from between Valis and, say, The Matrix and, say, the Terminator series?
Well, with it being a satellite...
Valis is a satellite?
Yeah, I think, well, from what I understand, he said it was a satellite that orbited Earth like a moon,
okay.
But was, like, always watching, always influencing things. And what I find really weird was at the end of the book, Valis, Philip K. Dick starts talking about, like, going to the cinema to see a movie. And it's like the movie was communicating to him about Valis, about Sirius. And I'd just gone through a period where I've been watching these movies with the paw prints, and it felt like they were trying to communicate some kind of message about Sirius. So I was finding that even, Philip K. Dick was linked to synchromysticism in some way. He'd been trying to piece together his bizarre experiences with the help of a film, a movie. So that kind of opened a whole can of worms, because I thought, well, if there's more, if there are quite a number of people have been led down this avenue, then surely there's something at the end of it that's worth exploring. Or maybe just by following the Sirius leads, it takes you to a different kind of headspace, which you may never have had. It's helped kind of alter the way that I look at the world. The thought that we do have that Sirius, is our binary star, is our, it does have a big influence. And, you then go to Africa, and the Dogon tribe, and that opens up a whole other can of worms, because they, their religion kind of worships the star Sirius over and above our own sun, and they knew all kinds of weird shit about the Sirius star system that we've only learned in the last 20, 30 years. It's just like a never-ending puzzle. It's like a riddle that I don't think there is an answer.
Do you feel that 2012 is an endpoint or a large marker for the evolution of humans, or do you think, like what I was talking about with Jake and Jim, that it's kind of just another sync blimp or like Sirius that gets you interested in this stuff?
Yeah, well, like have you read any of Daniel Pinchbeck's work?
I've listened to Daniel talk numerous times. I've never taken the time to where, you know, the Quetzalcoatl's return or anything like that.
Yeah, well, that's like it's through his work that I learned of, you know, apparently Quetzalcoatl, the god of light, is going to return. And having had like my own Quetzalcoatl experience and then reading his book, and he had felt like he was in some kind of communication with the spirit or the energy. Well, you know, again, it was another person who was reflecting back at me some of what had gone on in my own life. And he, you know, he wrote the whole book on the date 2012. And back when I was lying in bed and, you know, I was kind of consumed by Quetzalcoatl, it was the 2012 lead that helped make some kind of sense of that. So I think 2012 is going to be, you know, for some people, I think it may just come and go as, you know, any other year kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, it's going to be a moment when, like, I'm hoping, you know, I might get some answers, you know, because, you know, all this weird shit started with the date 2012. When that came into my life, all this other stuff started going on from it. So it's leading somewhere. Kind of what's going to happen, I've absolutely no idea. But I see it as a positive sign. I see that, you know, we're coming to the end of this, I think it's a 26,000-year cycle. You know, for a reason. You know, everything's kind of speeding up as we get to this crossover point.
Yeah, it's almost like a pinnacle in human evolution. I mean, we were talking about Hubble and we were talking about CERN, but with just technology, with the simple fact that I'm right now at the foothills of the Rocky Mountains talking to a gentleman in the highlands of Scotland, in real time, I mean, it's almost like a speeding up of time, because if we were to have this conversation 50 years ago, it would have taken months. You know, either for me to make planning to take the journey out to Scotland so we could sit one-on-one and discuss, or if we sent letters or any other way that we chose, it would be a difficult transition. Now, you know, it's in real time and it's happening. It's almost, you know, like I said, people take it for granted, but it's almost, it's the future. I can sit here and look at you and talk. Just like the cartoons we used to watch with Transformers and G.I. Joe and shit like that. And the fact that in some ways pop culture has inspired individuals to try to make, you know, science fiction and things of that nature work. It's like the art imitating life or life imitating art or whatever. But it's you know, we see these cartoons when we grow up. We see people talking on computer screens to other people in G.I. Joe. Is it mentally preparing us to accept that reality later on? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, have you ever heard of the old tale of Columbus when he arrives in America? And whether or not it's true, I don't know. But from what I hear is the indigenous people went out to the boats and couldn't see them.
Yes, yeah, I've heard of that. Because it's like their brain, they couldn't kind of compute what they were seeing in front of them.
Right. Until the, you know, the shaman or medicine man sat out there and reprogrammed his reality tunnel to accept that a boat was actually there. All they saw was waves crashing against the bow or whatnot. But see, like, that's what I feel like what's going on, it works on a double way, you know. First off, some guy was inspired by Star Trek having the communicators flip up. That's why cell phones flip up. But at the same time, like, perhaps the double stars and things of that nature in cinema are preparing our program to accept a second star in the sky. So it would be mundane. And that's what happened with the two towers. We saw the twin towers fall hundreds of times in context, including towers that weren't like the twin towers, like in Die Hard and stuff like that, before we actually saw them. I mean, could we have even understood what was going on if we hadn't seen that stuff? And in fact, I don't think many of us knew what was going on. I think many of us were taken into Oz when that fucking happened. I mean, if you go back and you watch old videos of 9/11, which I did recently, I was sitting there watching them, and the overall building collapsing was not what was giving me goosebumps. What was giving me goosebumps was the amateur footage on the street and the people's responses. I mean, there's people going, no, 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 no. Do you know what I mean? And they could not accept reality. But when I think about that, when I draw a connection between Die Hard's building blowing up and then the Twin Towers blowing up, and when I was thinking about that pattern, I watched Transformers. And you know the scene where the robots transform and Optimus Prime is like rolling around on the overpasses and he falls down and a little minivan skids to a halt and the mother's like basically panicking, but the kid is like going, cool, mom. Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the younger, I don't know, maybe there's kind of less fear in the younger generation because they're more open to things.
Yeah. Like they're being prompted for, you know, galactic beings wrestling around on the street corners to be a normal thing or something.
Yeah, or they see it as cool, whereas, you know, someone else would see it as
madness.
Yeah. So I think, you know, because things, you know, since I've been alive, you know, the Star Wars helped. I think our imaginations have been opened up to more and more and more. So, like, what my kids are seeing on the TV.
Right.
You know, if I'd had access to what they've got access to, like the Wii and the mobile phones and all that, you know, it just wasn't possible back then. It just wasn't, we just weren't ready for it. We were seeing it in Transformer cartoons and we were seeing it in the pop culture, but we weren't ready to actually, you know, get to grips with it.
Right.
Whereas, you know, the kids today are. So God knows what, you know, in 10, 20, 30 years' time, they're going to have access to. You know, I'm sure they're going to look back to this moment and think, my God, we were living in the Stone Age.
Yeah. But it's all connected. I mean, like, we couldn't investigate the ancient mythologies like we do if it wasn't for technology. We couldn't have, you know, the ability to wander over an ancient Sumerian text unless we had the internet. And it's interesting you mentioned Star Wars, because Star Wars kind of is the jumping off point, wouldn't you say? It's actually written with ancient mythologies deliberately woven into it. And then
it's got all the key ingredients to get people's attention. You know, the Force and it just had everything that I think kids were looking for. And, you know, it changed the shape of where movies were going. And, you know, it's brought us to what we have today.
Without a doubt.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, it was slightly deliberate. I think that The Matrix was deliberate. The Matrix was another jumping off place. But, have you ever thought about doing that? Have you ever thought about taking what you have learned and actually just not really taking it for truth, but actually just writing your own story based on the same mythologies?
Well, like using what I've learned and putting it into like a book, or is that what you mean?
Yeah, have you ever thought
Yeah,
about
I've
doing that?
thought
Have
of
you
that.
ever tried it?
I did. I wrote. I seem to be coming kind of full circle because, like, maybe 7, 8 years ago, the black cat, the panther, was being spotted around the town that I live. So it was making the headlines.
Yeah.
So, like, the black kicked off a whole story in my head, which I wrote down. And a lot of the symbols in that story, I'm still finding in what I'm writing today. So the story
Yes.
never went anywhere, but the symbols that I thought I was just pulling out of the blue and putting into that story is, just as relevant today as it was back then, for entirely different reasons. So, have you tried writing? Have you?
Yeah. Actually, well, the job that I'm at now, for the first 2 years, I was just getting this overload of inspiration. Like I just had a story, and then you'd be thinking, well, that's a cool character, and what could I do with that character? And then like it would all come together like, oh, that's so perfect. That's so perfect. You if that makes sense. I developed this story in my head. And so then, I read a couple of books about grammar, and I read a couple of books about, how to write. Stephen King, who I love, had a book that was really short and easy to read called On Writing. And so I picked up some pointers from him, and he basically says, if you want to make a story, you write. If you want to be a writer, you have to write. So you have to sit down and write a story for 2 hours every morning, like set a little schedule. I'm going to get this many words done, or I'm going to work for this amount of time. And so I did that. I didn't have a computer at the time, so I was going to the local library. And for 2 hours every day, I just pounded away on this keyboard trying to get that story out that I had created in my head. And I did that for about 4 months. I had a big story, but then the computer disk erased itself.
So it's like, well, it wasn't meant to be, kind of thing.
No. Well, now like I don't get frustrated about very many things now. Before, if your MP3 player wasn't working, or your phone would drop a call, or some shit would get in your way, like a computer disk, or everything that you were working on a post, it suddenly mysteriously vanished, which you've experienced yourself. I might get frustrated, kick it around. Now, no, everything happens for a reason. So now that I've looked back on the story that I wrote, even though it's gone, I still have it in my head because I initially built it in my head to begin with. I didn't know about Joseph Campbell until after that. And then I stumbled upon Joseph Campbell, and I figured out what he had done for Star Wars, coincidentally enough. And, I even watched where he was picking out different mythologies and how they were in Star Wars, the belly of the whale mythology that happens throughout the world was like the scene where they're in the dumpster and about to get crushed, and in the heart of the Death Star or whatever. And now I went back to my own work and discovered that the things that I had been pushing to be as original as possible were nowhere close. Like the things that I had written, characters that I thought were completely mine, were actually mythology from the beginning of time. And then I found Carl Jung because of that and started getting to the archetypes. But I'm glad you had the same experience. And I've talked to others who have had the same as well. And that kills that conspiracy theory behind most of who get into this realm of thought. What they automatically perceive as somebody's doing this on purpose. Because you get certain symbols like the penguin, for example. The penguin's fucking everywhere, right? Your own experiences have led you to that, correct?
I often see penguins.
But it gets so overbearing that you're like, somebody knows about the penguin and is putting the penguin here on purpose, right? I mean, Fight Club, the penguin is like some special spirit creature that when Edward Norton focuses, he goes to his little spirit cave, and the animal he sees there is a penguin who just mysteriously turns to the side and says the word slide or some shit like that, and then off he goes. Yeah. But in the number 23, when he raises the book of a penguin, or when he raises the book, what's it called? I can't remember. Do you remember?
I think Fingerling Goes to the Zoo or something like that.
Yes. Because he's like, Fingerling, this book is about me. And he actually discovers that he actually wrote it. But he's like, you know, the Fingerling, it reads the same book that I or my mom used to read to me. Do you know what I mean? And it has a penguin, like an over-exaggerated penguin on it. And then most of the actors that we get involved with that seem to have high levels of synchronicities almost always get involved or wrapped up with penguins. Like Adam Sandler. If you watch Billy Madison, the first kind of big Adam Sandler movie, he always hallucinates a penguin. He gets drunk or whatever, and this penguin's like staring at him. It's this man in this penguin suit. He's like, oh, I see what's going on, Mr. Penguin, and shit like that. But then the penguin comes up again. Like if you look on the movie poster of 50 First Dates, have you seen that movie?
No.
50 First Dates involves two sync actors that come with high resignation. That is Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. And on the movie poster, it shows Adam Sandler playing a ukulele, singing to Drew Barrymore, and out of the corner pops a head of a penguin. And then it comes up in other movies by Adam Sandler. I've seen it in it was in Big Daddy. I saw a penguin in Chuck and Larry. There's just a random penguin they're sitting there they're having like their first marriage argument, and a penguin's right behind his head. I saw it in Bedtime Stories, and Adam Sandler uses common themes throughout his movies, probably on purpose. I also see the number 23 a lot in his movies. But, I mean, that can turn you into this schizophrenic, paranoid bastard who thinks this is all on purpose. However, when you see that it happens in your own work, when you write something and the synchronicities are in your own tales, that shows you that there's something else going on. Do you believe that we're all connected through this common subconscious?
Well, kind of definitely. You know, I've seen it so often now where, again, I'll think of something, and then I'll go and read it the very next day. Or maybe, you know, I'll just happen onto a post that somebody's written, and there's basically what I've thought, you know, in a bit more detail. So it's like we're all kind of helping each other. We're all connected on the, you know, I was, in fact, just last night I was explaining to Samantha that, you know, I think like we're all islands, we're all an island, and we appear to be separate, and I'm Richard and you're William, but the ground of the island, you know, dips under the ocean. So below the surface, we are all joined. We're all land connected. Right. We just happen to pop out of the ocean at different points.
Fantastic.
But, you know, from my island, whatever I'm thinking about is rippling out waves. And some of those waves may hit you and then affect what you're doing on your island. And they ripple back. And so I think we're all connected. We're all a jumble of islands communicating.
Beautifully put. Do you think that there is some kind of evolution going on where that's what's happening to us now? We're actually beginning to understand that. And it's almost like gravity. Do you know what I mean? Like I could never understand what the big deal about Isaac Newton discovering gravity, which is such an easy concept to teach any, you know, 3-year-old now, because it's so obvious. But I often wonder, I mean, did they even see the world the same way that we see it now? Or if it's kind of like with the Hubble or with the CERN, like discovering gravity, although may seem mundane now, actually changed the whole perspective of consciousness. And we're kind of messing and fooling around with the same shit now, with the synchronicities and discovering that we're all connected in such an obvious way. I mean, that perhaps that's what we're doing. And I don't want to seem or make my work seem overly important, but do you get the same feeling that what you're doing is very important to the consciousness of everything?
Well, I think what's going on in my life must, on some degree, ripple out and affect, you know, the collective. So if I'm on this journey and if I'm putting a lot of kind of energy on trying to figure out my own personal experiences,
right,
then, you know, it's getting more people interested. I think the reason that I love writing is, you know, that it may get someone to think or to look at the world in a slightly different way, or, you know,
yeah,
something happens to them and it's, you know, it, like your UFO experience was like a milestone for you, and me walking in a field and the name Quetzalcoatl, you know, that was like a big moment for me. But I think when you interact with this, you then kind of take it away with you, and I think some people will use it, you know, so it's kind of spreading. It, kind of like a virus, you know, once you come in contact with it, you're kind of contaminated with seeing the world in this slightly off-skew way. And I think it's quite liberating because then, you know, the universe kind of starts communicating with you personally, or starts picking up on penguins or elephants or whatever. And,
right,
you know, you just get led into new avenues of thought that you've never been before. You start evolving, you know, you start changing the way you interact with the world, which I think is, you know, is a good thing to keep things moving.
Well, like, okay, let's talk movies, because honestly, all we're really doing is like a couple of geeks talking about pop culture. But for some reason, I'm just thinking about Happy Feet. Have you seen Happy Feet lately?
Not lately, no.
Hey, you have seen it before, though?
I have seen it, yeah.
Well, I mean, first off, I was kind of, see, as an example, both of our work, I don't know if you've read my latest stuff about the dead, but we both picked up on Hugo Weaving. Is his name, name is Hugo Weaving, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we used him for two different examples, and the high resignations that happen within his composite character or his complete work as different individuals in movies. And of course, Happy Feet has to deal with Shia LaBeouf and Hugo Weaving, which are, and Robin Williams, all which have high resignation. And in this movie, they're all penguins. And so I sat down, I had the opportunity, and I watched that movie. And why I'm bringing it up is the fact that with synchromysticism, like putting those eyes on, I got real emotional to that movie, which seems really kind of silly to say, but I almost wanted to cry, because with the synchronistic lens put on top of the movie, it really takes on a new meaning, and it like you said, it's kind of viral, so you can't help but see certain meaning within or under the surface of the movie, in between the lines, kind of. And when the movie's basically dealing with these penguins calling humans aliens, and then them using rhythm to communicate with the humans in a way that the humans could understand and not destroy their territory. I mean, it was really kind of, it was poignant, if that makes sense. Do you get the same effect from movies? Do you feel like, you know, if you listen to what Jake said, that he often says it's like samadhi, you know? He said it was like And Aleister Crowley said once you get involved with synchronicities and stuff, that the universe takes on the appearance of being just a communication with your soul. Do you feel that? Like with movies, like almost like, or just seeing a certain commercial, like you just want to break down and cry at how beautiful it is or how perfectly it fits together?
Well, like the most recent one that springs to mind that kind of blew me away was Knowing with Nicolas Cage.
Right.
I can't really explain why, but it was just something about the story. It was a big focus on the children. And how, you know, they are the ones who will be, you know, carrying on after us. And I don't know, that one kind of hit home. Not a lot of movies I will see the synchronicities and I will just acknowledge them, but you know, I don't get too caught up in the movie, but there are certain movies that tend to get highlighted a lot in my life, and it's like, you must watch this movie, some, you know, when it comes out. When I do, you know, usually I've been led to it for a reason, so when I watch it, I am really absorbed, I am in the moment. I do really go deep into it, but, you know, it's only certain ones. I haven't had, like, I haven't wanted to cry at a movie in a while. But...
Well, let's get one thing straight real quick. I'm not a crier, all right? God damn it.
I know what you're saying. No, but I know. I do get, if it's, like, if someone connects with me with it, I will get absorbed. I will kind of go along with it.
Do you go to the theaters very often?
Yeah, I do take the kids quite a lot.
Do you feel that pull though? Sometimes, I mean, do you kind of get a little bit of a synchronistic buildup or synchronicity buildup right before you see a movie, or can you guess ahead of time that movie's going to be of importance?
Well, what usually happens is something will come out of the blue, like the sense of smell, the nose, and around about that time. I was just trying to make sense. Why do I keep being drawn to the nose and smell and all that kinds of stuff? And at the time, I was taking the kids to see the latest Harry Potter movie, and not knowing that it had any connection whatsoever with the nose. And, you know, half an hour into the movie, Harry Potter's got a broken nose, and it's being highlighted by all the people around him. And then he's in a subway station, and he stands in front of a poster for perfume.
Yeah.
So it's like, I was thinking, well, what's going on here? I'm thinking a lot about the nose and what that might mean. And, you know, that week, Harry Potter's shown me, again, pointing me towards the nose. So,
It's funny you should mention that, because I'm right here looking at the picture. I've had the picture of we'll do this real slow. Tezcatlipoca, okay?
Okay.
Tezcatlipoca, and the picture of him with his little peg leg, which is another sync issue that we've had a lot of attention directed towards the foot, and he almost has like a target on his foot, but he also has like a blue arrow coming out of his nose, almost like he just farmered a big nasty boogie. But like you said, you brought that down to the meaning of gnosis and the actual nose of meaning or whatnot. And it brought it out to the pig and in its relationship to the swine flu, which is another highlight of pop culture having the nose being brought up in it. And then you also watched Bedtime Stories with Adam Sandler again. And what happened in that?
Mm. Well, yeah, again, all of this nose stuff was swimming about, and I just happened to walk into the room while the kids were watching it, and there, you know, it's in a scene where there's a monster crawls out of a mandala, what could be the black hole, and they refer to it as the booger monster. And then shortly after, for absolutely no reason, there's an actor picking his nose.
Right, out of context almost, huh?
Yeah, so it's like, what, again, nose. What's going on here? So it just kind of leads on. You know, it's like, I don't know, it's like,
well, here, let me tell you about another dream that I had, and I wanna, you know, really seriously try to start to wrap things up here off of this one thought. Because after my initial dream with the tree monster talking to me, which really gave me a lot of insight, because he basically said, you know, we are the reason, which took my fear away. Because why would this world be destroyed if we were the reason that the world existed in the first place? Do you know what I mean? That one thing keeps me whenever I'm having the doubts, like we're not doing this for a reason, or if this doesn't mean very much. That one little message I got from my subconscious really brings me back home, because we are the reason. And we get all depressed about our limitations, but our limitations are not us. So when your computer disk breaks, or you don't have the ability to do this or that or the other, that's not what you are. You go way beyond that. And time keeps going. So, like, if you stump your toe, the pain will go away after a while. So the next dream I had was, it was with David Wilcott, which is an internet kind of celebrity. I was actually in Egypt at the pyramids with him. We were digging up mummies, and the mummies were dressed in Versace. And so afterwards, I woke up and it was very vivid. I was like, what the fuck? But then I started realizing that's what we're doing. If we're taking, you know, say Keanu Reeves, and we're like, well, Keanu Reeves gets his eyes poked out in Matrix, which correlates to Horus, the ancient Egyptian god, getting his eyes poked out by Set. And then he learns to see, and he slays. He learns to see without eyes, and he slays Set, which is exactly what Keanu Reeves does in The Matrix to Agent Smith.
Yeah.
And so what I saw was an Egyptian deity wearing Versace in the form of Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, the ancient, you know, the old day is coming back to the modern day. You know, but this time getting dressed up in Versace.
Right, they're wearing today's best, which they probably did back then too. They were probably wearing. I can't fucking afford it, Versace. What about you?
I wish.
And so, the next dream I had was about a Stargate, because I was reading a lot of Jake Kotz's stuff at the time, and so I dreamed about the Stargate over the ocean, and people were coming out of the Stargate, walking on the water, and they had newspapers in their hand. And I remember that in the dream, it was like Saturday. That's the overall feeling you got, was that it was Saturday. But the newspapers said the next day's date. They had Sunday's date on it. And so people were bringing back news of the future or future events through the Stargate. And then that's what this question on what I want to round up on, if this resonates with how you see this. Can we get information on future events through synchromysticism? If Jake Kotza had gone back before 9/11 and had noticed that throughout pop culture, the buildings kept falling down, and then the mystery building in the shadow, which is called the monolith, correlated to the 2001 monolith, could he have predicted that in 2001 the Twin Towers fail? Can we use the same synchromysticism of saying, all right, in 2001 the temple or the towers fail, correlating to the advancement of evolution in 2001 the movie? Can we say that 2010 something big involving Lucifer will happen?
I don't know. I think it's got to happen first, and then see how it was kind of pointed out in subtle ways that it was coming. But I don't know. That's a tricky one.
I mean, basically, that's what you're doing. You're saying that to the stars, you're using synchromysticism, saying that the coincidences with the star, the second star in 2010, you know, that kind of correlates to your paw prints and pentagrams.
Uh-huh. But what's going to happen as a result of that? You know, I think you only get kind of glimpses or little nudges as to what may be on the horizon.
Because I can't help but think that it's like his mirror. It's Texcatlipoca's or Texcatlipoca's mirror. And then that's what happens. Like, it's like it gets reflected back through history. And I know, like, if you're a true Christian, if you're, you know, versed in the normal Christian arcana, then it says people who tell the future or people who read omens will have, you know, are not God's people. These are false teachers or false prophets or whatever. I mean, is that what we're doing? Are we interpreting omens here?
Well, I think it's intuition. I think when things are happening, you know, intuition naturally picks up on it. The subconscious, the all-knowing subconscious, knows what is coming. And it will kind of drip feed us little insights or little nudges to get us thinking along the right kind of line, so that when maybe the event happens, we can see it from the bigger picture. You know, like have you seen the news about the storm, the dust storm over in Sydney?
I saw just a snippet of it, because there was something that said dust storms evidence of 2012 or something, which caught my eye, but I didn't read it. What was it about?
Okay. Well, like, just the other day, people woke up in Sydney and they thought they were on Mars. They thought a cataclysm had happened, when in actual fact, the dust from the desert had blown out to sea and then been blown back in again. And so everyone in Sydney was seeing red. You know, and it's now blown south to Brisbane, where my brother lives. And I just got an email from him saying that everywhere is just red. Everyone is breathing in this red dust. So it's a bit, you know, it's gone a bit bizarre over in the land of Oz at this moment in time. So then, you know, with all the seeing red, the red eye stuff, kind of, you know, it doesn't explain kind of why that's going on, but it's a kind of...
I have my own theory about the seeing red thing, because that goes down to the Red Sea, right? If you switch around, it's the Red Sea and Moses splitting the Red Sea. And the other day I was doing some investigations with Young. I looked up what his interpretation of the Red Sea was, and he used it in terms of psychology. He said that the people who were swept down, the Red Sea basically symbolized the subconscious. Because it's like a wave, like you were talking about earlier, a wave of energy or whatever, smashing down to the people who, you know, the people who survived on the other side, God's people or the Jews or whatever, had already gone through the subconscious. You know, they had come through and used the subconscious to get on the other side. But then the others who didn't recognize the subconscious were crushed by it.
Yeah, I like that, because it's, you know, it's like the ones who crossed the Red Sea then were in tune with their intuition, their subconscious. They were following the path. You know, I think we all follow the path we're on. We cannot kind of step off the path. But yeah, I like the, you know, because the way I see it is it's a wall of water. And here, this is the line. And I've been thinking about the road and the train tracks, you know, on this one path. You might want to go off in a different direction, but I kind of keep being reminded that there's only one kind of direction that we're all heading in.
Right. The train tracks are pretty, like I said, I use it as a symbol of destiny, because it is. It's an unavoidable... You have, like, if you're on a train track from Colorado to Scotland, There's only one destination. You can't take the train to Africa if it's going to Scotland.
Uh-huh.
And I see it used in pop culture with that connotation. Like the, you know, the 2K, the Y2K symbol with Robin Tunney that passes by our head that Jake uses over and over again happens while they're on the subway, which is a train track. And then the which we've all used the Matrix subway scene between I mean, that happens with on the train tracks. And Smith actually gets hit by the train. And then
and then you know, that's all about Neo's destiny. You know,
right.
It's like he was destined to do that before he even took the red pill. It's like he was already the one. He was already gonna end up doing what he did.
Exactly.
You just have to then follow the steps.
Exactly. And then there's another movie by people who have names with JC, like Jim Carrey or James Cameron, who's actually the guy making that movie Avatar, or another one would be John Carpenter. I saw a movie called Starman with John Carpenter, with Jeff Bridges as an alien. And Jeff, you know, Jeff Bridges shows up constantly as the dude from Big Lebowski and other situations where he has high levels of synchronicities. But Jeff Bridges actually gets down and dirty with the one girl who was Indiana's wife, or ends up being Shia LaBeouf's mother in the Indiana Jones franchise. But she mates with Jeff Bridges as the Starman while they're on a train. Like, that's what they're doing. They're hiding from the police. So during the rainstorm, they run to the train. They hop the train. And then that's where they make love. And she gets pregnant with the Star Child. So it's like an unavoidable destiny. Like, something that had to happen. Which goes back into the whole the fusion of man being, you know, turned into an alien by his DNA. Like in The Day the Earth Stood Still. Or like in District 9.
Uh-huh.
What do you think of the number 9?
I see it as, I know it's been brought up over at the sinkhole, like as a doorway. And especially with all the cat stuff, with the 9 lives.
Oh, yes.
And the doorway, you know, in the last post, I linked the cat with the doorway. Ripping a hole.
Okay, so that's you got the District 9 with the cat food being obsessed over. And the 9 lives of the cat. Go on.
Yeah. And then, you know, the 9 pops up a lot with, like, the 9 Dark Riders.
Oh, yeah.
Who get hit by a tidal wave.
Oh, yeah, the 9 Riders did get hit by the tidal wave. Were their horses destroyed?
By the seahorse, yeah.
By the seahorse. But then what do they end up doing? Well, they end up riding Garudas, don't they? Huh. Big
so it moves. Birds. Yeah, it takes them off the ground and takes them to higher perspective kind of thing.
Oh, beautiful. Well done, Richard. Well done. Well done. All right.
Yeah,
so,
I do like 9. Well, I saw an image. Like I used 9 as my avatar simply because I liked the cat design. But
yeah,
the fact... The black cat was jumping through the 9. It all feels like 9 will lead somewhere. Yeah, in the tarot, like 9 is the hermit at the top of the mountain.
Right.
So I keep seeing like this journey on the train tracks where this doorway is our kind of ascension up a mountain. Like I love the Polar Express poster.
Oh, yeah.
It shows the train. And it's like, as we go, as we continue along the tracks, we're actually spiraling inwards. So we're eventually we're arriving at the tip, the summit, which is where Hermes the Hermit is, you know, cloaked in grey, the perfect balance between, you know, black and white.
Yeah.
So the 9, it's got all this great kind of symbolism about it. So
yeah, you play because when you put the hermit out there, I remember you did your post about the hermit. I mean, the hermit just all of a sudden bombarded my ass. I saw it everywhere. Like my door here at my house, I always close it during the summertime, and my wife gets really angry. She wants it open. She's like, "What are you, a hermit?" And it probably was no more than like 10 minutes after I had read your post. So I immediately stopped and was like, "Whoa, what? Wait." And then that was the same time that a movie came out that I went and watched. I think it was Transformers 2. I went to go see Transformers 2, and everybody in the movie theater was wearing that Led Zeppelin shirt that has the hermit on top of the mountain.
Okay.
Yeah, and so the hermit, but I noticed as well that he's actually in the shape of a nine. I think that was actually intentional too. And he's kind of holding the little lamp of illumination above the mountain so others may climb the mountain as he has done. He's like he's leading them to the top of ascension.
Okay.
And you know the hermit means Hermes, right?
Yeah, he seems to be at the peak, at the top.
Right.
And I like in Transformers 2, there's like the character who goes back to Odin. You know, is he the blackbird?
Yeah.
He's the jet guy, but he's like a one-eyed Odin.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think
so. And then if you look on the tarot, Hermes the Hermit is the cloaked, the bearded guy. If you look for a picture of Odin and you look for an image of, the Hermit, they're pretty much identical.
Wow.
And it's all linked to this pyramid. So we've got...
And Odin was on top of a mountain, too. Odin was at the top of the gods' mountain.
Yeah, so there's a whole lot of stuff there. After watching the movie, I thought, I'm going to have to leave it a while, and I think I'll come back to this.
Okay.
Try and piece it together, but...
Because I noticed like also... Hermes. Yeah, the original Hermes Hound post that you mentioned earlier... was where I had linked the Fool's card to Jim Carrey. And then if you look at his new one with the picture of A Christmas Carol, where he's holding the lamp in his right hand, just like the Hermit card.
Exactly, yeah. So it's all these themes in different ways, all, and if we join the dots between them, I think, we get a kind of better understanding of what's going on just below the surface.
All right. Well, good sir. I think that we're going to end off on that note.
Okay.
Thank you so much for doing this. I think we have a lot of good stuff here that I'll have to go through now. And I hope to do it again with you soon, sooner or later, I guess.
Yeah. Thanks for asking me, Will. Enjoyed it. Thanks.
It was a pleasure, man. And I would like to thank you for everything that you've done. I really enjoy your friendship, and I enjoy what we've kind of constructed here together. And thank you for all the insight that you have introduced into my consciousness.
Thank you.
And I got to go have lunch with my wife, so I hope that you have a good day, sir.
Yep, same to you, Will.
All right,
take care,
mate. Take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
Are you enjoying yourself so far?
This is me well outside my comfort zone.
Your children will be born in a world of two suns. They will never know a sky without them.